Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. Okay, now for the 10th value. I did not set out to create a list of 10 values. And remember, this list of values is from most important to least important as I've perceived them. I'm not saying that this is a perfect list, but this is a list of things that I've seen that I think are important to us. And the 10th one is what I would call naturalism and the laws of nature. And I've left this as the last because I think it's an area where it is a value, but it's a value that is very much repressed. I regard Christianity as playing a big role in the repression of this value, and this is a very important value. It is a highly repressed value. And like I say, I didn't set out to create a list of 10. It's sheer accident that's caused me to get to this and make this the 10th one. And I can probably go and re-look at my list later again, because no doubt there can be input. But I wanted to try to just arrive at things that I've observed that I think are things that are part of us, that are things that are part of us that we often even expect and think other races work like this, when in fact it's absolutely not the case. Not all of these values are unique to us. Some are more unique than others. I regard the ones at the top, I would say of these values, I would say that the first six of these values, going from truth, law, meritocracy, territorial, fairness, discipline, I'd say the top six are the ones that I'm the firmest on. And the higher you go, the more important it is, and the more it's a value that we believe in. But as you go further down the list is to values that we have, but we don't believe in them as strongly as we should. And naturalism and the laws of nature is number 10. In our innate selves, we do have an acceptance, a given acceptance in many cases, even Christians do, that nature is right. For example, we do not go and exterminate all the lions because they eat zebras and impalas and other peaceful animals. There's the lion, the leopard, the cheetah. They go and all they do is they eat all these other peaceful animals that are doing them no harm, that are not threatening them. They're going, they're finding them and they're killing them. Many times the way they kill them is not even nice to look at. The animal that's being killed is actually being killed in quite a difficult way. I've seen videos of lions killing a buffalo, and you've got several lions putting their claws into the buffalo, chowing down on the buffalo. The buffalo is still standing. The buffalo's in pain. But we don't go out and slaughter the lions, the cheetah, and the leopards because they do these things. Those animals, the lions, the cheetahs, the leopards, are themselves mammals like us. They have got an IQ. They're not dumb. These animals are not stupid. They might not be able to have a dissertation on trigonometry, but they do have an IQ. They have the ability to feel fear and the ability to feel pain. You can see it. Scientists have experimented with it. We know that most animals, if not all animals, I personally believe that all animals feel pain to some degree or other. And you can see the fear of animals at every level. Animals experience fear. If you look around at the way animals behave, animals experience fear. If you go hunting and so forth, you will quickly realize that animals experience fear. If you go shooting, You'll soon see that creatures that used to not be afraid of you, they'll quickly get afraid of you if they start realizing that others are dying. When I was a kid, we all used to go shooting birds. That was like the thing that we used to do when we lived out in rural areas. We all used to, at the very least, go shooting birds. That was a common thing that we used to do. And animals experience fear, and animals become scared. And animals are constantly on the lookout for something that can kill them. And all of nature is filled with this. You'll see animals experiencing fear all the time. Fear is a survival instinct. It's a thing to preserve life. And pain is part of it. Pain and fear are things that all creatures experience in one way or another. And you can actually see it in their behavior if you watch them closely enough. Insects, higher animals, all of them, they all go through the same thing. But we do not go and exterminate lions, cheetahs, eagles, sharks. We do not go and obliterate them all because they are busy killing and eating. We do not kill eels and other animals that are vicious killers. We accept, and even Christians accept, that this is the world that God made, that nature operates like this. Don't go messing with the lion. Leave the lion alone. He's living the way that he lives. That's how that animal and that species lives. And he eats of the others, and that is the process. So we have, and especially in Africa, possibly in the USA, I can't say for Europe, but especially in Africa, whites, even the most Christian whites, accept that nature is nature, that inside nature there's cruelty and there's death. And don't mess with it. Leave the animals alone. Even Christians accept that. So you'll find that even Christians will accept hunting, fishing, and the eating of meat. Now, inside this acceptance of naturalism is also an acceptance, again, of consequence. That if you suffer, and you suffer from something that you could have prevented, then there's an acceptance that the suffering is something you could have done something about, and you didn't. And you are therefore criticized for your lack of planning, your lack of effort, etc. Whites not only accept nature in the form of animals killing animals brutally, even cruelly, but we also accept a certain naturalism among ourselves that if you do a stupid thing or you do a thing without foresight, that you know what? You are to blame for what you got yourself into. There is an acceptance of a certain amount of responsibility and foresight and planning in what you are doing. And it's even expected that you must do it. And if you don't do it, then we say, but hey, you're an idiot. Why didn't you do the obvious thing? So we have a certain acceptance of what I'd call naturalism and the laws of nature. Somebody goes and jumps off a cliff and he dies. We'd say, well, that was a stupid fool. We have no remorse for that kind of thing. But this naturalism is counterbalanced by our morals and ethics. For example, we help the sick. I once read in a book about China, as it used to be, that a guy was in China, a white guy, and he observed the following. There were some Chinese on a boat, on a small boat, a whole bunch of them. And I'm not sure if one of the Chinese was sick or something. And the other Chinese just took the guy and they just threw him overboard. They just grabbed him and threw him overboard. And he drowned and they just ignored it. They just took him, threw him overboard, and he drowned. I think he was sick. I'm not sure. But The man observed this, the European observed this, and he thought this was utterly callous. I'm quite sure the Chinese guy was sick. And he thought this was utterly callous. Now, whites do the opposite. When somebody is sick, we try to save them. In fact, we try to save people in situations where our doctors and specialists and scientists know that the person's going to die. They know this person's going to die. People who have cancer, certain kinds of cancer, will kill you. There's nothing you can do at this point. We'll probably find cures for it before long, but and maybe there have also been cures that have been suppressed, but let's not get into that. But we know that somebody's going to die. Yet we will feed that person, we will give that person oxygen, we will give that person medicine until the moment of death. And in fact, we are so good at it that we will even keep a person alive up to the point where, you know what, we could keep this person alive in his comatose state for another 3 years, but you know, we think that maybe we should just call it a day. But we go to unbelievable lengths to try and save life. So on the one hand, we accept certain naturalism in nature and certain naturalism among ourselves, like why were you drunk when you drove the car? You know, why did you do that? Didn't you think of taking a precaution when you got on the roof and then you fell off the roof? You could have done this. You know, we have a certain acceptance of naturalism, and then it's counterbalanced by morals and ethics. And a lot of those morals and ethics come from Christianity. But don't make any mistake, a lot of these ethics also existed under paganism, but Christianity has taken it way further. And so you've got this Christian pushback to helping the weak. But I think it's an overstated amount of Christianity, but where we go to tremendous lengths. You know, we've sent missionaries to go and help the blacks and teach them all kinds of things. We've sent missionaries to cure them of illnesses, to teach them how to read and write, to teach them about the Bible, to teach them values. We've sent all these missionaries out. Then some black guy grabbed the missionary and raped his wife, or the black guy came and cut the missionary's throat, but we still send out more missionaries. In Africa, we even excuse the blacks. We look at the blacks with a certain naturalism. How many times in the past did we whites, and I'm thinking when I was a kid, colonialism, you see the blacks doing evil things, cruel things, stupid things, and the white will go to the black and say, "Oh goodness, you know, I'll fix this for you, I'll help you with this." But the white will do that knowing that the black is stupid, and the white will forgive the black his stupidity. If it was a white man who did the same thing, the white would come down like a ton of bricks on the white. We even have accepted a sort of naturalism to the blacks. Oh, the blacks, they did those horrible, stupid things because they're dumb people. We must go and teach them. And we treat them like our children. We used to treat them like our children. Oh, these are our children. We need to teach our little black children, teach them how to be civilized. And so we forgive them sins, which we shouldn't be forgiving them for anyway. And we then go and teach them, and we mollycoddle them, and we try to turn them into civilized peoples. Okay? So we have this one aspect of us that recognizes naturalism and nature, and then it's counterbalanced by, and I think over counterbalanced by Christianity, where we even go and help them, even when they present a threat to us. Even when they have got malicious intent to us, even when they are jealous of us and desire our things and would like to kill us or steal our things, we have it an overbalanced Christianity that's anti-naturalism. If you actually look at Judaism, if you go to paganism, the time before Christianity, before Judaism, whites were a much more natural kind of a people. We accepted lots of the laws of nature. It was built into our society, and a lot of what Christians think of as evil pagans was actually just pagans accepting naturalism and natural law. Even National Socialism, even Nazism, is actually just an acceptance of natural law. You know, the shark is going to try and eat another fish. The cheetah is going to do that. The black is going to do that. You just accept it, that that is what they are. You don't go and try and change them. But what you will find is that Judaism and Judaism's offshoots, which are Christianity and Islam, that Judaism and its offshoots are anti-nature. They try to do things that are impossible to achieve. A simple example that a Christian came up with once for me was, a Christian said, oh, but, you know, we're striving for a world of peace, peace forever. And I'm saying to him, man, you know, clearly you haven't studied history. Peace forever is impossible. And it's very likely even undesirable. Dr. William Pierce, who was a scientist who became a Nazi in America, Dr. William Pierce himself has said that peace is maybe not a good thing. You don't want peace all the time. You need a certain amount of war. You need a certain amount of strife. I definitely agree with Professor Quigley and his concept of the tension of development, that life is a turmoil. Life is a constant turmoil because life is competitive. Regardless of what all these scumbags are saying at high levels, regardless of what every president in the whole world is saying, the fact of the matter is that there is competition in the world, and it's intense competition. There is competition in the world all the time in every aspect of life. And you only get progress through incessant competition and self-criticism. So to expect a time of peace, what are you going to get out of peace? You're just going to sit and do what? Nothing? Go and look at all these peoples who never developed. Look at all these peoples that existed before whites came and brought Western civilization to them. Go and look at them and you'll find that people in the Middle East lived the same way for thousands of years. There are people in the jungles of South America, Africa. For thousands and thousands of years, these people have done absolutely the same thing over and over again. And even there, when they did the same thing over and over again, they still had conflict among themselves. Maybe not the kind of conflict and the nature of conflict that we have, but they got angry, they did murder, they did do things where they tried to harm each other. But if you look at the world in reality, the world is a world of dynamic competition. And pressure brings about change. It brings about evolution. It brings about progress. And progress is impossible if you just sit down and do nothing. You need tension, and you will find that progress moves at its fastest, especially in modern times, during war. Because the immediate requirement to survive results in immediate, urgent plans to do things. And you will see unbelievable levels of creativity coming out of warfare. And you'll see why it's actually the best at it. So, do you really want peace forever? Is peace forever actually desirable even? I'm not saying that war forever and whites killing each other forever is desirable either. But I'm just saying that as a group, maybe we want peace among ourselves. But we do want competition amongst ourselves. That's healthy. But do we want peace with everything else in the universe? Do we really want to sit and have no enemies? Or are enemies good for us? Enemies could be very healthy for us. And the pagans, the pagans, the pre-Christian pagans, accepted naturalism, conflict, strife, struggle. They accepted it as a part of life, and they lived their lives without skipping a beat. They were not anti-nature. The Jewish Christian concept that you're going to get a time of eternal peace, eternal heaven, and everything's going to be fantastic forever, and nobody's ever going to lift a finger to harm another, that is actually totally anti-nature. It's completely against nature. You know, those biblical verses about the lion and the lamb, or the lion and the jackal, or the lamb and the wolf, you know, all those biblical references, that is anti-nature. It's flying in the face of nature. And where Christianity goes the most against nature is in Christianity's glorification of the weak. It is a total glorification of the weak, the poor, the downtrodden. And you basically take the losers in life and you elevate them to the highest levels. Oh, he was so poor. He will have the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Really? Do you really want to elevate somebody who's poor? Why is he poor? Is he poor because he's lazy? Napoleon once said that the way to help a man is to arrest him and put him in jail if he isn't working. Put him in jail and then teach him to work. That is the best thing you can do for him. And we all need lives to live. We all need to live our lives and experience things. And we need to do things because in struggling, we improve ourselves. And in group struggling, we improve the group. And one key element to not forget in this entire discussion is biology. Why are we a group? Because biology made us a group. Because if you take blacks and interbreed them with Chinese, you do not get Europeans. We are a group, and nature made us a group. We are a group by the laws of nature itself. And if we breed among ourselves, all of our progeny will be like us. So nature has determined us as a group. Again, along comes the Jew and the Christian, and they say, no, no, no. You know, you may be brothers and sisters, but, you know, you could have the brother in Jesus. And now you jump to some black guy who's your brother in Jesus. Again, that's an anti-natural line of thinking. You are now saying, oh, goodness. Oh, you see that Chinese guy over there? He's a Christian. He's my brother. And you who are my brother, hey, you, bugger off. You've got to be careful how you tie these things together. Another place where a lot of anti-nature is coming into existence nowadays is Jewish liberalism. Liberalism is taking men, turning them into women, turning men into women, completely anti-nature, totally anti-nature. Now, if you look at nature itself, nature also rewards you in strange ways. Nature brings with it certain natural energies that are powerful. They're like really powerful. One of the places where it's the most powerful is sexual. There is a drive for the men to get to the women, and the women to get to the men. And what is the purpose of this drive? The purpose is to procreate and create more of your own. Nature. That's nature at work. Nature is saying to the guy, get the girl, make her pregnant. Nature is saying to the girl, find the guy, get pregnant. Nature drives them together. and it's an emotional, wild thing. But nature's pressing them together to do that. Now along comes the liberal, and liberal says, there are 72 genders and, this and that and here and there. But when nature's pressing the people together, nature also brings with it rewards. Nature gives the man and the woman feelings of exhilaration that they would otherwise never experience. They cannot experience it except by going and finding drugs. Nature presses you together, and then nature rewards you with all kinds of feelings and thoughts and things. Nature is working on us all the time, but you will find lots of Christian values pressing against nature. Nature is trying to keep us alive, actually, and nature is even pressing us together as a group, and nature is rewarding us as a group. And you'll find all these pressures against nature, all these new things, especially now in the age of madness, the true age of madness of Jewish liberalism in America, where boys are girls and girls are boys and the others are halfway in between and this and that and all kinds of chaos and men have to. I swear to God, I saw the other day a woman said that her husband had to take a year off of his work so that he could do parenting while she ran her career. The man had to go and look after the woman's baby. That's not natural. That is not the way that we existed for thousands of years. Is this really the way we want to continue forward? Probably in nature we could. And probably in nature, the male could become like maybe with other animals. You do get animals where the female is bigger and stronger. She'll even have sex with the male. She'll even eat the male after sex. Maybe that is where liberalism will take us, where the women are in charge and she'll pick a man and then after she's had sex with him, she'll like shoot him or something. God knows what. But, those things are, maybe that's where liberalism is taking us. But if we want to work with the system that's truly worked for us, then we need to go back to the more natural system. And there are many benefits from our natural system. And we ourselves as human beings, I've discussed sexual dimorphism. Sexual dimorphism is at its most advanced among whites. Sexual dimorphism is the difference between white men and white women. The male and the female of the white race are sexually the most different physiologically and mentally of any of the humans on the planet. With blacks and with Asians, you'll find that their physiological differences between their sexes are not that great. Especially with the Asians, you've even heard of the lady boy and things like that. They are not as sexually divergent as the white race. The white race, men were men and women were women. We have got a very much bigger difference between the two of us. And one thing that I've noticed about our system as a race is that the more manly the men are, the more attracted to the men the women are. And the more feminine the women are, the more attracted the men are to the women. In other words, we're like magnets, but it's like the law of magnetism in opposition. In other words, the more you make men different to women, the more magnetism there is. The magnetism becomes ever more powerful. The more you make men and women the same, the more the magnetism dies, actually. You'll see that in many ways. You'll see it in lots of ways. But take the men and make the men manly, take the women and turn them into women, ladies, and then you'll see the more you pull them apart, the more nature presses them together. The energy that presses them together is like the opposite of the law of gravity. The law of gravity is, it weakens with the inverse of the square of the distance. With men and women, the more you take them apart, the more they want to be together. It's fantastic. So, that's how we were. That's how we've lived. Why don't we work with the things that worked for us? The guys must be craving the women. The women must be craving the men. And it's healthy. They want to be together. They will start doing wild things in order to be together. How cool is that? And it's nature at work, and nature will reward them. It will reward them with all kinds of emotions, and it will reward them in mental ways as well. When women have children, they start changing. A woman who's had a baby suddenly becomes different. Her mind physically changes. These are the things of nature. Nature is powerful, and we've worked within nature for so long, and the benefits are so tremendous. But of course, we have to just be careful about nature, Do you want to have a nature where, any man who's stronger than any other man just goes and kills him? We have got a group dynamic that we also need to preserve. And so that is where what we call civilization, it's our way of living. It's something that's evolved among us over thousands of years. And our system was working, and we should be thinking inside that system and what's going to make it work even more. And the acceptance of naturalism and nature, I regard this as a very important thing. We really need to accept and work with nature in certain respects. There are times when we can go against nature, but we must be careful not to go against nature to such a degree that it totally becomes counterproductive and totally starts causing great damage. Is it wise to let two faggots marry and then adopt children and things like that? Do we really want to go in those directions? There are certain things, like especially with marriage, men and women and family. These are values that whites have quite strongly. They see this as the right way to be. And I think that there's a lot of nature that we could tap into and should work with. And we must be careful of the glorification of the weak as well. The glorification of the weak is very dangerous because now the glorification of the weak is allowing open borders. It's allowing us to let all kinds of degenerates and other races come into our societies and tell us what to do. We are doing all sorts of hideously wrong things. America and Europe are feeding blacks across Africa, who, if we let nature take its course, nature would kill them. They would die from starvation. They would die from starvation because they are a dysfunctional society. They are failed states. Their leaders led them into disaster. They must fix among themselves the things that went wrong. So if nature comes and kills most of them, and then a whole bunch of the remainder are angry, and they go and they find their leader and they cut his head off, then that's nature at work. Let them be punished and suffer accordingly. They will learn faster from their own sufferings, I assure you, than a million missionaries could teach them. I assure you, if we leave them to die, they will learn so fast about nature. Nature will fix you quickly. Nature will punish mistakes with death. Nature doesn't muck around. If you jump off a cliff, Mother Nature's not going to say, "Oh, you are poor, and I will give you a soft landing on the rocks below." You will crash down onto the rocks below, you'll be ripped apart, you'll be dead, and that's that. Mother Nature doesn't forgive. Mother Nature punishes you. And if you don't learn, you die. And if you don't die, you might lose an arm or a leg or an eye or something, but Mother Nature will punish you. Mother Nature does that to every single animal on the planet. And why are we trying to be different? And why are we trying to be different with other races, other peoples, and even ourselves? There are things about nature where nature is moving things forward. And I would add that Professor Quigley spoke of the tension of development, but I would add that there is Mother Nature also pushing us forward. Mother Nature, nature itself, is also pushing us forward by threatening us. Volcanoes, earthquakes, floods, and it's just a matter of time before a meteor hits the earth. Even in the time of the internet, we've already had a piece of rock exploding across Russia. Go and look at nature at work. Nature's freaking ruthless, man. It's a matter of time before the sun is going to explode and kill all of us. Of course, it's a few billion years away, but nature is also providing certain pressures of development. Examples of nature providing you with pressures are food. You have to eat. If you don't eat, you're going to die. So there's the pressure for food. There's the pressure for water and liquids. Nature is pressing on you every day. You can't say, okay, this year I'm not going to work and I'm not going to eat. You will die. That is how life is. And we need to be careful about nature and competition and values and where we put these things in. And it seems to me that all elements that come from Judaism and its two religious offshoots of Christianity and Islam are anti-nature. And it probably is because Jews themselves are not good at survival. And Jews are a parasitic civilization. Again, a topic to get to. Quigley mentioned parasitic civilizations. Most civilizations are actually parasitic. Even whites were parasitic. By parasitic, it means that you do not produce anything. You go and you grab things from others. An example is when we were hunter-gatherers. A hunter-gatherer mode of existence is parasitic. You are not breeding animals. You go and find the animals that are in nature and you are killing them. And you are reliant on nature providing enough animals for you to live off. That is parasitic. Jews are parasitic. Blacks are parasitic. Criminals are a perfect example of parasites. A criminal is a parasite. He doesn't produce. He goes and steals somebody else's stuff. So parasitism is when you steal or acquire or kill things that are produced elsewhere. But we whites are unique almost in our ability to create civilization, and civilization is when you create more than you need. Farming, agriculture, that was when we moved away from being a parasitic group of people who relied on nature to producing more than we need. And so we've created this thing called civilization. But in our progress, we've also reached a point where we can allow all kinds of degeneracy to actually function. And we can actually allow it. We have enough resources to allow all kinds of degeneracy. So we can have children that are maybe totally mentally retarded. We can have people who are incapable of functioning. They can't walk. They can't feed themselves, etc. But we have enough resources that we can do it. And we can keep them alive their whole lives. So you've got to realize that we have, through working with nature and struggling ourselves, we reached a point where we can produce more than we need. Now we can take on millions of blacks as parasites. We can have Jews as parasites. We can have all kinds of parasites, and they're parasiting off our knowledge, our civilization, our stuff. And we've got to be careful of allowing parasitism to continue and anti-naturalism to continue. It's a big weight. It's slowing us down, and it's a big weight on us. And it's starting to get to the point where it's creating even more weirder, more bizarre anti-natural things. Should we be allowing these things? Nature is efficient. My observation of nature is that nature generally is efficient. Every animal lives off some other living thing. The grass is alive, but the cow eats the grass, and something else comes to eat the cow. The lion may kill the cow or the zebra, and so it goes on. If you look at nature, nature is efficient. One man's meat is another man's poison. What is good for the one is bad for the other. The one will live by killing the other one. But that is nature. Nature is efficient. And we need to also be efficient. And do we need certain kinds of parasites? Apparently, we need a Jew as a permanent parasite in our civilization. But maybe we don't. And maybe we need to find out what is the weakness that allows us to have all these parasites. Why are we tolerant of these blacks as parasites? Why are we using these blacks? Well, in Africa, we're using them because we are caught up on the need for extra labor. So our problem is labor. Maybe we could have solved our problem by having more children and building more machinery to be our labor. Then you don't have the problem of labor that is disloyal to you, that can turn on you. So, nature, I think people need to give a lot of thought to nature, naturalism. We generally accept and are in tune with nature as a race, generally. We accept most of nature's values, but we do end up going into weird, bizarre things. Another bizarre thing was Christianity with the concept of nuns. Nuns and priests whose only loyalty is to God. How many children could we have had from those whites who were nuns and priests? They devoted their lives to God. They were probably intelligent, well-meaning people. Imagine if they had had children. How many more children would we have had? We need to look at the anti-nature aspects of our religious beliefs. These things have got big negatives. Another progress-driven thing that came from the pagans was to glorify the strong, glorify achievement. That's a meritocracy thing. Christianity glorifies the weakling, glorifies the non-achiever. Do you really want to do that? At school, do you like it if your child is cleverer than another child, but your child gets a lower grade? Do you think that's fair? Do you think that is right? Do you think that is beneficial? Glorifying the weak has got many problems with it, and Jews jump on this and they go at it like crazy. There is even the Jewess who put that thing on the Statue of Liberty that said, the world must give us their poor. That's Jewish rubbish. That wasn't an American that put it there. It was a freaking American Jew, American Jewess. Do we really need to concern ourselves with looking after others, others who can become our enemies? The blacks themselves in Africa should have proved to us that, hey, you civilize these black people, and guess what? The black people turn on you. And Christians should even observe that. How many times has a white gone and taught a black Christianity, and then the black Christian has turned around and told the white where he's right and where he's wrong? Bishop Tutu in South Africa, how many times did he turn on the white man? There was a black Christian for you. There was a black brother in Jesus for you. And how many times did he and others? There were even worse ones. Reverend Frank Chikane. Go and look at Christianity and how it rebounds on you when you do your brother in Jesus thing. And then you go and apply it to others. I really believe that we should stick much closer to nature. We should stick with nature. Nature's worked for us. And in actual fact, a totally unique white achievement, totally unique, is the ability of the white man to dominate nature and change nature itself. That is the greatest achievement of whites, and it's utterly unique. Simple examples: flying, sailing, submarines, cars, you name it, rockets. We have been able to take nature and change nature to work for us. We are unique in the extent to which we've done this. We are utterly unique as a people. 93 or 97% of all science and technology in the history of the world comes from whites. If there's anybody who can work within nature, can tame nature, can use nature, can work within nature, it's us. Why, therefore, do we concern ourselves with unnatural, anti-natural types of things? Glorify the weak. Why aren't we using the pagan approach of glorify the strong, glorify the guy who tries harder, glorify the woman who has more children, glorify all kinds of other values that strengthen us. Glorify the things that strengthen us and get rid of the things that weaken us. I think that there's a balance to be struck there in this issue of naturalism. And I'm not saying that, you know, if granny gets sick, that you take granny and you toss her on the sidewalk and you leave her to die. No, I'm not saying that. I myself looked after my own mother until the day she died. I don't believe that you should be cruel and nasty to our own people, but you need to have very reasonable things as well, reasonable requirements. I'm not saying that if babies aren't right that you go and toss them into a rubbish bin, but we need to look very carefully at where do we draw the lines, where do we think it's reasonable to draw the lines, and all our decisions must be based on what is going to work for us, and we're a biological group. So that is the final of the 10 values, naturalism and some of the counterbalances with morality, where do you put it in, etc., etc. I think that that is an area that needs a lot of clearing up. I think it's an area where there's plenty of potential, much to look at, much that we've done, but we need to clear our minds a little bit on this. And I'm a firm believer that every single person who is born needs to get a place in life where he or she can contribute to life, can experience life, can have some of the pleasures of life, and can grow in their own way. But we need it to be done in a way that works for us. And you'll find that the moment we focus on our people, then we can actually tighten up the rules. We can tighten up the rules because now we don't have to worry about all these others who are unproductive and parasitic. We know our people can be productive. We just need to sort out life so that they can function, so that they are given the things that they need, that they can grow themselves, and then that they can be helped to success. The children need to be nurtured, and the children need to be nurtured and strengthened until they themselves become excellent and fantastic, and they do that to the next generation. That's how it should carry on. You know, we should be aiming for strength and success and dump all these others that are enemies and problems for us, and stop helping people who should be left to die. Like, if we'd left nature to do its stuff, the blacks would not be a problem. There would hardly be any black people alive if we left them alone to die. Nature is trying to kill them. So I hope that this is some food for thought for you. This was the last one. It's the one that's the most chaotic. But I thought it important to throw various things in that a lot of whites accept natural things, and then in the same breath they go and work on weird, unnatural things. And I think that this needs to be clarified. There are some things we need to toss out the window. We need to focus on what's going to strengthen us and what's going to give us progress and life, and give us a life that is good, a life that has value, and a life that has meaning and values for us as a group that will take us beyond the stars, man. We are capable of so much. We are capable of so much. And all of it is coming out of whites. Much of it coming out of Europe, I might tell you. The Europeans are among the most unappreciated of whites. But we all do not appreciate each other properly the way we should. And I've sat and thought about it in many ways. Whites in Africa do not appreciate whites in Europe and America. Whites in Europe do not appreciate Americans and the whites outside Europe. Whites in America do not appreciate the whites of Europe and the other whites. There's a lot of stuff where we don't appreciate each other, where we were doing things which were helping each other. And it's time to bring all of that to an end. We need to appreciate each other and realize the strength that we have as a group. And the man who, in my view, had a wonderful view of whites was Ben Klassen, the man who created creativity. I will get back to Ben Klassen. I have a lot of respect for him in that sense. He had a big picture view of whites as a race. And he said that if all the whites of the world stood together, we'd be 10 times as strong as everybody else. And even my supporters said that's not true. We'd be 20 times as strong as everybody else. And that's damn right. We would clean everybody's clock. Everybody's clock. They'd be running for their lives. We are definitely the greatest thing that's existed on this earth. And sadly, Christianity also downs that kind of thing. You get Christianity saying, oh, God is infallible, but man is so fallible. That's very negative stuff. Very negative and absolutely not true. Absolutely not true. From what I've seen in my life, I'd say man is more reliable than God. I've seen God not coming through on so many occasions when everybody said he'd come through, and I think he's slipping up somewhere. So these are some thoughts for you to ponder. These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.